super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake, mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man who destroys all opposition, who destroys anyone who comes in his path, 42nd Street Pete!
Wah-ba-ba-loo-ba-ba-la-bam-boom. Yes. Well, we're back. It's another Saturday Night Live, and I don't feel like taking calls. I really don't. I don't know why. I'm just in one of those fucking pensive moods, because it's been a weird time, weird week, as usual. But, you know, at least we got Gary on, you know, last week to talk about what we want to talk about, but in the interim, a lot of other weird shit has happened, and people have been, you know, emailing me what I think it is, what do I think of that. Well, one thing that came up is Clive Barker canceled out of his appearance at Monster Mania and was replaced by Jamie Kennedy for some reason.
Jeez.
Was he in Scream or something?
Yeah, but you can't replace someone as awesome as Clive Barker with Jamie Kennedy.
But here's my point. Everybody knows this guy was sick. And I see, that's why I don't understand the logic of any of these promoters anymore. I really don't. Some of the stuff that goes on just baffles my mind, and this pitting people against each other as we go back to that. And I just found out that someone, I'm not going to say their name because everybody's so fucking super sensitive and everybody's being urged to sue me for some reason. So some party canceled out of Convention A because Convention B said, well, we do more shows than you, so maybe it would be your best advantage to stick with us and not do any other shows, which is fucking extortion. But here's the thing, and I don't think a lot of fans realize this, that most of these guys that, you know, we laughingly, you know, say we could cram them all on a tour bus and there's no big fucking difference. They go from city to city every fucking weekend. If they can't find a hotel, they could, you know, go to a flea market or, you know, a swap meet or auto wreck or something like that and set up. But most of these guys, unfortunately, are only making a living with these conventions. They're not getting work in film, as I've covered before, and things aren't panning out, unfortunately, in life. Dennis Leary said it best: welcome to life where things don't go as you planned. So, you know, in essence, you know, some guys are working a lot and some guys aren't working at all. And some guys, you know, you say, well, oh, I'm on the IMDb and it says in pre-production. And pre-production means they ain't got any fucking money. That's what it means. And nobody has any money. That's the problem today. Nobody has any money. Everybody's going fucking broke. Hate to be this doomsayer of doom and gloom, but, you know, I'm sorry. I'm tired of this horse shit going on where celebrities are going to charge $80 in advance for a fucking autograph and then $100 at the show. Now, I really have to say, if you're that much of a mark that you can afford $100, say you met a certain party, I honestly don't know what to think. I mean, maybe I have a different mindset, or maybe I have more value of my dollar, but I was perturbed when it went up to $20 with a lot of people, and it's probably there today, because I'm not going to pay anybody for an autograph. I'm sorry, I admire your work, but, you know, something, I paid to see your movie, I bought your tie-in merchandise, and I don't feel like paying you $20 for a minute of your time. That's the way I look at it.
I agree.
So, you know, hate to say it, but, you know, you're calling yourself, I'm just going to fucking, I don't give a shit, Monster Mania, and you're having wrestlers in the Hanson Brothers reunion. You're calling yourself Chiller Theater, but you have a $6 million man, Lee Majors, coming in, and you're having a Porky's reunion. I'm sorry, guys. I'm at the end of my, you know, I guess, tenure with a lot of this shit, because you're killing it, and it's all going to crash and burn, and I can see it, because I've seen the fall of the grindhouses and the drive-ins. I've seen the fall of, you know, the sleaze areas in New York City, 42nd Street. I've seen Screw go out of business. I've seen Liquidators close. I've seen the last Peep Show on 42nd Street flicker its bulb out. And now I'm seeing the same thing happen with the conventions. It's a gradual deterioration. It's an oversaturation. I hate to badmouth anybody, but a lot of people are completely overexposed, yet several of them still draw big lines because they're personable and nice to their fans, and they really appreciate their fans. Others, it's a fucking job. And, you know, like I said, there's too much animosity for me to, like, even want to go to a lot of these shows anymore. I mean, You know, Wasteland to me is the heart and soul of fandom. It's the Alamo. It's fandom's last stand, and I will, you know, be there till the door is shut, and hopefully they'll stay open for a long, long time. But as for anything else, I don't think so. I really don't. It's just not. It's not worth the aggravation. It's not worth, you know, the internet bullshit. It's just not worth it anymore. So, you know, I always said I would go out with a bang, and I'll go out. If I go out, it's going to be with Wasteland, because that's the biggest bang there is, and Wasteland has no sign of going out. And, you know, that's my home, and that's where I'm going to be. Not to say there isn't, you know, other good conventions. Now, going down to Pittsburgh on September 21st to the 23rd, it's Horror Realm's big show, their yearly event. And they have a good lineup. Ken Faree, Sid Haig, Danielle Harris, Doug Bradley, Ming Stoll, Kyra Sean, Brian O'Halloran, Tiffany Shepis, Laurie Cardill, and Bill Cardill, John Amplis, Mark Tenero, Mike Christopher, Randy Kovitz, and I think they're adding some other people in. Always a good show, great atmosphere, great crowd, a lot of stuff happening after hours. They got a VHS swap room, VHS screening room. There's some prom thing going on, prom party, high school horror prom. I don't know the thing in front of me. But, yeah, they got a lot of stuff going on after hours, and, you know, it's run by some great people, so I would go out and support them. But now, to address something else, I was supposed to be there, and I'm not. And before anybody else wants to get stupid with going, oh, is there an issue with you and them? No, there is no issue with me and anybody. I don't have any fucking money. That's my issue, all right? I appreciate being invited to shows and asked to do things and stuff like that, but the bottom line is, right about now, I can't afford a hotel room. I can't afford a dog sitter. I am fucking broke. Nobody is making any money doing this shit, do what I do. I rely on internet sales, not for my own merchandise, for what I can hustle and wheel and deal. And I'm fucking starving. So, bottom line is, I don't even like staying in hotels because I'm not used to staying in strange beds. I'm a creature of habit. But there is no issue between me and anybody. I just can't afford to do it. And, you know, I appreciate the fact that I can get a table and sell my stuff. But, you know, it's just, I'm really at the end of my rope with selling stuff, too, because I've been humping stuff around for the last 40 fucking years. I went into business for myself on and off when I hit around age 20. I was wheeling and dealing, hustling, had a couple stores, a couple video stores, flea markets, the like. I broke my ass wheeling and dealing. I've been doing it for so long, and now it's like just tired of it and can't do it to the extent that I was doing it years ago, where it was fun and, you know, everything was a challenge and shit. It's now it's all, you can only sell it on the internet. Flea markets are dead again. Nobody has any money, so that's my issue. I can't afford to do it. So there is no issue with me or anyone else up there. I wish them the best. They put on a great show. They're really trying to establish themselves in the Pittsburgh area because there's nothing going on there as far as con-wise. And my only thoughts are I wish they'd move it closer to Halloween or, you know, back in the summer of some sort because, truthfully, going a couple weeks before Wasteland, I think, really hurts them. But, you know, that's not my call to make. It's only a suggestion. But, like I said, wish them all the luck in the world. Unfortunately, this time around, I can't be there. Hopefully, things will change, you know, next time around, then I can be there. So, again, it's November 21st through the 23rd. Go to horrorrealm.com for all the details. And that's what's going on with that. No drama, no nothing. Now, on a more sleazy front, I said I had another announcement I was going to make. Actually, I'm not reneging on something I had said before that I'm not putting out any more DVDs. However, there were a couple, you know, more than a couple, actually. I'm not exactly sure. I have two that are going to be coming out maybe by Wasteland. And that's because this was all in the pipeline before a bunch of crap started where I decided I didn't want to do anything anymore. But, you know, Pop Cinema and After Hours Cinema have been a good relationship with me. We're friends, and this stuff was all transferred already, so there's no sense in wasting it. So it's going to come out. Only thing is, I am not going to be on the DVD doing anything, you know, commentary or introduce or anything like that, because it would be cost prohibitive to fly me back to Jersey to the studio. And like I say, in a dead economy, you just got to go bare bones. And it's going to be worth the money, though, because one thing is coming out was going to be the Corrupt Desires collection. It's three films. As before we went on the air, I was actually screening one, you know, and the sight of Ron Jeremy really frightens me, especially a Ron Jeremy in transition from skinny to slightly pudgy to morbidly obese like he is now. But the one film that we based the collection on is called Corrupt Desires. It was shot in the late 80s on film. And, you know, we got a beautiful, beautiful transfer of it. And it's got a lot of weird, twisted shit in there, too. So we have that. And the other one is Lady Traffic Cop. And I believe this was also released as Badge 69. And that one I have to check out because I don't remember that. And the other ones are going to be called Sex Crazed Lumberjacks. And no, it's not a gay movie. It's about fucking in the woods, something we can all relate to. And if you've ever tried it, sometimes you realize how horrible it can be if you get near poison ivy, tree bark, or fucking ants. So that's, you know, going to be coming out. Hopefully I'll have that up, stuff up by Wasteland. And the other ones are going to be, a lot of people asked for it, so who am I not to deliver it? The John Holmes Collection Part 2, 3 feature films of John, Around the World with Johnny Wadd, Sex As You Like It, and episodes of An Oriental Sex Kitten. So those will be coming out too. Of course, I'll be writing the liners and the jackets, you know, for them. And, you know, like I said, hopefully we'll have them at Wasteland. And another thing I had done, I don't know if I had said it on here or not, but I got a lot of, you know, film laying around. Excuse me while I take a little hit of wine here. And a lot of it was deteriorating, you know, to the point, you know, vinegar smell, losing the image entirely. So, to be realistic, there's way too much to actually consider putting out legitimately. So what I did was, I basically hiated them off of a screen, you know, projected them as best I could. I guess you would call it digitizing because it is a sort of a digital image. Some of it's good, some of it it's fucking horrible. You got reds, you got pinks, you got some stuff that's really clear, you got some stuff that's really fucked up, but, you know, in order to preserve some of this shit, you know, I had to take these measures, and there's a lot more. I just did 11 volumes. It's called the Lost Loops Collection, and the 11th volume is Last Loops on the Left Collection. And there's a reason for that, which I'm not going to discuss on the air, but you can only let your imagination run wild. So, I got, you know, all kinds of, you know, different things. The Sperm Burping Superstars. I think Carnival of, I don't know, Cavalcade of Cum or some shit like that. Fucked up stuff. So, going to be 10 different ones. There's at least 12 loops on a DVD. It's, like I said, it actually has music on it that I can probably get in a lot of trouble for. But, hey, fuck it. It's a limited edition. I only made like 9 or 10 of each. So, first come, first served at Wasteland. You know, it's all going to be. It's just weird. It's a lot of the stuff. Actually, I don't think legitimately Pop said I would want to put it out anyway. It's that fucked up. So yeah, some of his stuff crosses the line big time. So we go with that. So yeah, that'll only be at Wasteland. I'm only doing this as a one shot deal. I mean, if I sell them all and there's a, you know, call, I'll run off another bunch, you know, between shows. You know, because I got a pile of this stuff. And like I said, it's better to try to do it this way, and at least, you know, you get to see it at some point than, you know, watch it just fade into nothing, disintegrate, which, you know, films with vinegar syndrome and aging have to do. But, you know, you got to realize something, too, with all this stuff. Even regular film, a lot of it goes back, you know, to the point where stuff from the 70s is now, like, what, 50 years old, 40 years old now? So, and realistically, this stuff was not kept under ideal conditions. So, you got to try to salvage what you can salvage, hopefully. Now, speaking about film, am I on track, Todd? Did I miss anything I was supposed to fucking interject?
I think you're doing good.
Okay. Just trying to do this with, you know, some decorum here, because we're talking about movies. Now, I had alluded on Facebook that I had come across a few movies that I don't think a lot of people have ever seen or ever heard of. And see, back in the day, you know, when you're a kid, the TV is your babysitter. But the big thing was, as TV programming stretched out a little bit, they need some kind of a showcase around 9 o'clock, you know, for more of like, you know, if you're in a New York area, you know what I'm talking about, because it was like the three big channels, 2, 4, and 7. The two lower channels were 9 and 11 and 5. So that was sort of like an independent programming thing, where the other ones were the bigger networks, you know, CBS, NBC, and ABC. So in order to like counter their programming sometimes, because 9 o'clock was like a prime time slot, one thing I do remember is there was a million-dollar movie at 9 o'clock, and this was in the New York area. And what it was, you know, was there was a big demand for filler for television back then, because there wasn't a lot of original programming. This was, you know, in the early stages of the 50s, you know, 60s, all this stuff was going on. So they had a, you know, didn't have enough like regular programming to fill in all the hours they wanted to do. So they would be buying packages of movies that were previously like just sitting around or, you know, considered made their run and were basically worthless now. But now there was a new way to do this. So, you know, million-dollar movie had the Allied Artists Library at one point. They had the Universal Monster Library at one point, too. But, you know, there was a lot of minor and major films that sort of slipped through the cracks that wound up there. And one of them, ironically enough, was a film called Blackbeard in 1952, actually the date of my birth. And it starred Robert Newton, Keith Andes, Linda Darnell, William Bendix, Jack Lambert, a bunch of other people, you know, character actors you wouldn't know. And Newton was one of those guys. He got famous by playing Long John Silver in Disney's Treasure Island. And you watch Blackbeard, and this guy is chewing up scenery like there's no tomorrow. He's like, he was credited with originating the style of speech credited to be, you know, equated with pirates, like, you know, "Arr, there she bombed me," and it, you know, this guy, like, he just chews the scenery like there's no tomorrow. And interesting thing was that he played Sykes in Oliver Twist in 1947, and Oliver Reed, who played Sykes in the musical Oliver, was highly influenced by Newton and really tried to emulate him at some points. And I just picked it up. Weirdly enough, I had to get it from Hong Kong. I couldn't get it from here. It just seems to be, you know, unavailable over here, and I got it with, you know, it's obviously a film chain. It's, you know, got some glitches and stuff. But, man, it brought back memories. It's just like, you know, when you were a kid just watching this stuff. And like, a million-dollar movie was on every night at 9 o'clock. It was the same fucking movie. And then twice on the weekends. And then another one would run. So if you missed something, or you were just watching, like it was something you weren't allowed to watch, you just kept catching it bits and pieces. It was some cool shit. But, yeah, I remember Blackbeard. You know, Linda Darnell, she had started modeling at age 11 and was given her age at like 16. And I think she tried out at Hollywood, and when they found out how young she was, they turned her around and told her, "Don't come back until you're 16. So she had done that. She'd done a couple other things. And she died in some kind of a house fire at age 41. And, of course, William Bendix, who was a, you know, a major heavy and character actor from the 40s up into, the 60s. You know, all those World War II movies like, Guadalcanal Diary and, let's see, it was a bunch of stuff he did. He was always like a sergeant. And then, you know, always played a detective and always a tough guy. And his last film was Young Fury. And he passed away at age 58 of a stomach ailment. Robert Newton pretty much killed himself with drinking, and he passed away at age 50. And then we know Reed passed away at a pretty young age also from, you know, all the excesses. But really great, great movie. Loaded with character actors. Jack Lambert, who was in Veracruz, Machine Gun Kelly, always played a heavy. Very, very underrated character actor. He never achieved like the status of like Jack Elam or Lee Van Cleef or Ernest Borgnine or Bronson to that extent, or even Richard Devon. But very, very underrated. And of course, Anthony Caruso, who was in a bunch of those Corman movies shot down in Puerto Rico. Tons of TV stuff. You know, he was in this. He was playing some French pirate Pierre something or other, but. A lot of sea battles and stuff in this. A lot of, you know, hand-to-hand combat. A lot of treachery. I mean, Newton just fucking chews the scenery. I mean, he's fucking great. Really great. Makes me want to go out and find Treasure Island, which would probably, you know, then again, you know, you go back to the 50s with this stuff. They weren't too you know, shy with the violence back then, as long as they weren't, you know, blood splashing across. But there was a bunch of shit. I mean, when they killed Blackbeard, they buried him up to his neck in sand by the tide, and as the tide came in, he fucking drowned. It was, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, holy fuck. I'm like, you know, fucking 8 years old watching this shit. So, yeah, if you can find it, I might have a copy or two up at Wasteland. Never know. Never know what's going to be on my table.
That's the truth. I know that firsthand.
Yep.
I'm not saying that in the best way.
Yeah, I know. Well, there might be some surprises this show, too, because I'm not going to say who contacted me. I'm just going to like say it's going to be a surprise and a lot of eye candy at my table if it does happen. So.
That's true.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I mean, what the fuck? I'll be 60 by then. Yeah.
Freaky.
3/4 of my life is over. I'm coming home. Home to the grindhouse in the sky.
Well, there you go.
Yep. Well, anyway, back to what I was saying. Right after, a few years after The Wild Bunch came out, there was this movie to hit the drive-ins called The Revengers. And it was William Holden and Ernest Borgnine. That was like, you know, the name value and Woody Strode. And they had a rather eclectic mix. They had Reinhard, I can't even pronounce this guy's name, Kellen DeHoff, but if you remember the spaghetti westerns, he was in, Massacre at Fort Holloman or Reason to Live, Reason to Die. A couple other ones he was in. Oh, also this Lee Marvin movie, Shot at the Devil.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You'd recognize the guy. He was the ship commander. And then Jorge Martinez de Hoyos, who was one of the peasants in The Magnificent Seven. Another Mexican actor, Jorge Luque. Susan Hayward, the little romantic bit. It's actually a pretty violent fucking shoot 'em up. You know, what happens is Holden has a ranch, and he's out, and they're attacked by Comancheros, and they kill his whole family and shit. So he's going after these guys, but he needs people to go with him. So it's sort of like a Dirty Dozen thing where he goes to his Mexican prison and he gets, you know, these guys out. And then they double cross him and then they come back. They agree to go with him. You know, it's then it becomes this like marauding band. The guys, you know, the Revengers, they just, you know, go into town. Somebody fucks with them. They start shooting people and shit. So there's some, you know, really cool scenes and stuff. Might come across as a little dated now, you know, where The Wild Bunch still holds up. I don't know whether, you know, this would in certain people's eyes, but I hadn't seen this fucking movie in years, and I sought it out, and, hey, you know, it was worth a second look. You know, it wasn't like I got the boogans and got fucked again, you know? So, I know boogans fans are like, oh, he dissed the boogans. Sorry. I hate to wait 3/4 of a fucking movie through for the payoff anymore. It worked in the 50s because you had no choice. And here's another one. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I was, you know, going through my mental Rolodex. Young Fury in 1965, A.C. Lyle's production, was directed by Christian... How do you pronounce that guy's name? Newby? From The Thing?
Huh.
Yeah, you don't know either. The original Thing. I know supposedly he didn't direct it, but his name was there. Oh, fuck it, I don't know. But anyway. Rory Calhoun, Virginia Mayolone, Aunt Chaney, Richard Arlen, John Agar, and Jody McCrae. This is a precursor to Young Guns. Because it's just like this gang of like young gun fighters ride into a town because one of the guys' father is just got out of prison, ex-gunfighter, ex-bank robber. So, of course, the kid's there because he didn't raise me, you know, to break his balls and shit. But then his gang gets out, and it's led by, you know, John Agar playing the heel. And it, tell you, for 65, it gets pretty fucking bloody. One guy gets shot in the fucking throat, and the blood's gushing through between his fingers and shit. Another guy catches a knife in the back. Agar gets shot in the face, and there's a big splash of blood. So, you know, for that time period, pretty fucking violent. And, you know, Lyles used to like to give all these, you know, old-timers the work, you know, because Chaney and Arlen, you know, they were up there, you know, in age. You know, and Rory Calhoun was a regular in these westerns back then. But, you know, that's another one it's worth a look. If you can find it. I just found out it's public domain. Yeah. Here's one you could probably get in trouble for.
Hey, have you seen that? Have you seen that? That 8-pack of spaghetti westerns that they put out at it's like $5 at Walmart.
No, I didn't see it.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of Lee Van Cleef stuff on it. I'll find out more about it. I'll look at it again.
No, I you know something. Everything he did that was in any way decent, I got. I mean, the ones that suck are God's Gun and. I haven't seen Kid Vengeance in a while, but I remember I saw it in the movie theater, and I was pretty disappointed.
Gotcha. But, I didn't know, because I was like, oh my gosh, you know, there's a bunch
no,
of
cool stuff. If you want to go by him, I'll say it right now. The ones worth having are Sabata, The Big Gun Down, Day of Anger, did I miss one? El Condor, Death Rides a Horse.
Sounds like there's a lot of them.
Yeah, those are the real good ones. The Return of Sabat is okay. What the hell was the other one he did? Beyond the Law is okay. God's Gun is abysmal. Take a Hard Ride's okay, but that's more of a blaxploitation type deal. There's more. He's there because you know, they needed a real good baddie. But the ones I just first mentioned, those are the ones that are probably the best. You know, don't forget The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And, you know, actually, if you really want to get technical, For a Few Dollars Four was his film. It wasn't Eastwood's film.
Right.
If you really, really sit down and you really watch that film, it's not Eastwood's film. It's Van Cleef's film.
True.
So, but anyway, back to my regularly scheduled shit here. This You Can Never Get Away With Today, Slave Ship, 1937. Need I say more? There was a scene, I remember this shit. Okay, it's Warner Baxter, Wallace Beery, George Sanders, and Mickey Rooney. Mickey Rooney's a young kid dragging this little black kid down the beach, yelling, "I caught him, he's mine." I'm like, you know, I'm thinking of this now going, holy fuck. So, yeah. And you can get this on one of the archives. It's one of the Warner archives or something like that. Burn on demand. You can get that for your viewing pleasure. Now, here is one. You might remember this one. The Lost Continent from 1951.
Oh, yeah.
Cesar Romero, John Hoyt, Whit Bissell, Hugh Beaumont, Chick Chandler, Aquanetta, Hilary Brooks, Sid Melton, and... Yeah, remember that? This one, you can probably get this. I don't know if it's out of print or not, but I think it's a cool little movie. I mean, I saw it on TV when I was a kid and then didn't know that when they had the dinosaur scenes, they turned into a green tint because they couldn't do that on a TV because TVs were black and white. So
yeah,
but they'd taken it out. But anyway, what happens is there's some rocket that's launched and it lands on some island. And they have to go, a bunch of scientists have to go get it. One's a Russian, so there's a little bit of distrust there. So they have to climb this plateau, and of course, they lose Whit right off the bat. He slips out of somebody's hand when they're climbing, and he's gone. So they get up to the top. Actually, they find, remember Aquanetta?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in it for a brief moment as a native girl.
Gotcha.
So they get to the top, and then it turns green, and there's a bunch of dinosaurs, and it's all stop-motion shit. I don't know who did it, actually, but it's pretty cool stuff. And they lose Sid Melton up there, too. He gets gored by a triceratops. The weird part is that scene, for whatever reason, was cut out on the videotape. I mean, it's a nothing scene. He just turns around. They show the triceratops. They pan to his face, this look of horror. You see the thing come charging in. You just see him, and then he screams, and then you like see the guy shooting at it. Then they back up, and they go over, and he's just laying there. He's like, you know, the little trickle of blood coming out of his mouth, and they give him a cigarette, and that was it. And here's something I didn't know. There was a bunch of shit going on, and nobody really knew anything about this guy. He died in 2011 at age 94. Because he was one of those familiar faces that popped up in all the TV stuff. You know, like little guest spots on TVs. But yeah. Nobody really knew a lot about him. But he actually, he lived to be 94, and he died in 2011. I mean, all those other guys, unfortunately, are gone, you know. But that, you know, as far as a cool little movie, that was a cool little movie. And like, you know, they said with the stop motion, and that was 1951. And remember 1955, King Dinosaur?
Yeah.
Burt I. Gordon's first film, where they go to the planet Nova. It's a new planet, and it's populated by dime store lizards masquerading as dinosaurs. And the weird part was, it was two men and two women, and it was like the men were tossing the women around, and like one of the men gets wounded, and the chick goes over to help him, and the other guy tosses her away, and I'm like, wow. Am I reading into this, like, correctly? Yeah. I don't know. It's pretty fucking weird. And the lizard violence, I think, was real, because you can't throw, like, a fucking baby alligator in with a tegu or an iguana or something and expect something not to happen. So, yeah, that was pretty twisted, too.
To be honest with you, I'm surprised by some of the things like Django Kill. You know, I was searching for that, and I finally found it. And I'm surprised by, you know, everyone talks about a lot of the stuff H.G. Lewis was doing, which was over the edge. I mean, it went, like, Blood Feast went pretty far, 2000 Maniacs. But, you know, some of these movies from the 60s, these spaghetti westerns were going pretty damn far, too, with the graphic scalpings and the throat slashings and the arrows and all the weird stuff going on. I was like, holy cow, Django Kill is probably the most unhinged movie I could ever think of from that era. It was like, what, 69, 68? And I'm going, holy cow, man, this thing was, like, way ahead of its time.
Yeah, that's when they got the gay gang.
Yeah.
And they shoot the guy with gold bullets, and they cut him out.
It's nuts. Yeah, exactly. It was crazy. Yeah. They were like cutting the bullets out of this guy.
Yeah, I got that. That's Blue Underground. I think that's out.
Yeah, it is. I got it on Blu-ray. It's great.
Yeah, it's completely twisted. But see, that never got released over here in that shape. That was always cut to shit.
Right.
I don't even remember what the fuck it was released out of over here, to be honest.
Crap, we gotta go to break.
Oh, shit. Alright, we'll be back with more obscure films.
Yeah.
Attention, pussy shoppers! Take advantage of our penny pussy sale! If you buy one piece of pussy at the regular price, you'll get another piece of pussy of equal or lesser value for only a penny! Try and be pussy for a penny! If you can find cheaper pussy anywhere, fuck it!
You
Ladies and gentlemen, the man with the plan, stuck in the desert apparently, talking about spaghetti westerns. 42nd Street Pete!
Did we pass that already? Or I don't know. What was the last thing we did? Was King Dinosaur, correct?
Yeah, we were talking about King Dinosaur.
It always segues back into spaghetti westerns. I remember there was a couple cowboys against dinosaur westerns.
Yeah.
Beast from Hollow Mountain. Actually, I watched that the other night. I found a copy of that. I'm like, well, I haven't seen this in years. That was stop motion.
Yeah.
And then the one Harryhausen did, the one that Willis O'Brien always wanted to do, Valley of the Guanji.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was great.
So, yeah, take your CG fucking generated dinosaurs and shove them up your ass.
Agreed.
Harryhausen was a god, will always be a god, as far as that type of thing goes. Yeah. Well, what, you know, what great stuff that guy did.
Oh, amazing.
He's still around, too, isn't he?
Yeah, Harryhausen's still, you know, he's up there.
Yeah, everybody's up there.
Yep. He's up there.
Here's another one that maybe, I don't know if you remember this, Night of Bloody Horror from 69.
Oh, yeah.
Gerald McRaney from Simon and Major Dad. Play some psych. I remember that thing opened up. Didn't a priest get a fucking ice pick or a screwdriver in the eye?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Because that was the whole thing. Oh, Night of Bloody Horror. Well, maybe it's like Night of the Living Dead. Let's go see it. Guess what? You got fucked again. Yeah. The tagline was, you only can die once. Well, twice if you fucking sat through that. I remember there was something with a guy's getting his head split up with a meat cleaver that looked pretty realistic back then.
Yeah, I don't remember a lot of it.
Is that actually out on DVD?
I'm not sure.
I heard Octoman's coming out, though.
Oh, my.
Yeah, Octoman.
You know, that's a crazy story about that damn...
What?
About Octoman, how that guy killed himself after he saw his own movie.
Harry Essex killed himself after he saw his own movie?
Yeah.
Well, didn't the... What's the name of the girl? I keep misspelling it. Pierre Angelique?
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't she die of an overdose after that, too?
Yeah, it seems like that movie was cursed.
Yeah, well, look at the fucking Octoman. That was Rick Baker's first stuff.
It was. But I liked it. I mean, there's no reason to kill yourself.
No, actually, as far as bad movies, I mean, somebody must have scored on that, because that movie was public domain. Somebody let that slip out. Somebody had to pick up the rights to that real quick.
Right.
I hope they found film, though. I hope it wasn't off a fucking tape like these jerk-offs have been doing.
Hey, I have to put out there also, right about now, let people know that the Boogans, gorgeous, gorgeous DVD, even better Blu-ray. It's just a fantastic print of a pretty kick-ass little movie. You know, people.
No, that movie sucked.
I like that movie.
It sucked.
I don't know what's wrong with you, but I like it.
If somebody wants to give me a copy for nothing, I'll give it a second look. But I saw it on HBO in the early days, because it was the thing they kept replaying on HBO in the early days was the Boogans. Silent Scream and Assault on Precinct 13.
True.
So I was really impressed back then. Then, you know, how many years go by and I never saw it. And then Norman got it in a box of shit and I took it home. I'm like, almost psyched up to watch this. And I'm like, wow, what was I thinking?
It's still good. I really enjoy it. It's a neat little monster movie, man. I like it.
I don't know. You want a neat little monster movie? Yeah, but I just found out you can get this. Vampire Beast Craves Blood.
Okay.
You can get it as Blood Beast Terror, and it's 1968. Remember Tygon? They put a bunch of stuff out in Great Britain, Doomwatch and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the one. Remember I told you I got fucked on a double bill? It was Vampire Beast Craves Blood and Curse of the Blood Ghouls. Okay, Ghouls, Living Dead, Flesh Eaters. Okay. It was Slaughter of the Vampires retitled.
Okay.
Okay, so... Vampire Beast Craves Blood is this geneticist who combined human genes with a death's head moth that when she metamorphosizes into this creature, she likes to suck blood and Peter Cushing's in it. Doesn't that make you want to run right the fuck out and see it?
Not now.
Yeah, well, it's on Image's Blood Beast Terror.
That's cool.
Yeah. Which is probably out of print, probably on eBay for $5,000. Now, if you want to talk about bad early spaghetti westerns, you'd sort of be hard-pressed to top the Gunfighters of Casa Grande from 64. This is one of these things where, you know, 64, how old was I? I wasn't really looking at Westerns. I was looking at fucking horror movies, more or less. So I don't know whether this thing actually ever played over here or not, but it went up on late night TV. That's where I saw it. Because, again, as television pushed into the wee hours of the morning, they started running usually programming stopped at 1 o'clock. They'd have, like, bunch of shit maybe up until 11, then news at 11, then The Late Show, which would be a movie. Then that would run into like 1 o'clock, 1:30, then they'd have Sermonette, no, the Star-Spangled Banner, the Sermonette, then go off the air until like 7 o'clock in the morning. But as you progressed, they started, you know, throwing shit on after 1 o'clock. And then you saw some cool shit like Shack Out on 101 and, you know, like Gunfighters of Casa Grande, which I probably thought was good when I saw it back then. But it had an early appearance by Aldo Sambrell, and Alex Nicole was in it. Here's a good one from 64. This is another thing they used to throw for filler, too, especially like around my area was Channel 7. Those West German films. Remember them?
Yeah, yeah.
Edgar Wallace one. This wasn't Edgar Wallace. It was something called Dog Eat Dog with Cameron Mitchell and Jane Mansfield. That was a fun fucking movie because Cameron walks around half the time with blood on his face the whole movie. It's a black and white one. And she just walks around and goes, crackers! Yeah, people get murdered in all kinds of strange different ways. Dark Sky put it out. It was on a public domain label, but it was all cut to shit with She-Demons, which is another one. That's another one. Richard Kahuna. She-Demons.
Gotcha. I know what you're talking about.
There was something else he fucking did. Oh man, maybe it might have been Dog Eat Dog. Cause I'm trying to remember. I think it was four directors credited and he was one of them. Cause they must have had either, you know, who the hell knows, because nobody's around anymore. Either maybe they had to have an English language director there, or maybe they did something over here. But I'm pretty sure it looks like it's all filmed over there. It's that cheesy black and white look from the 60s. Yeah, that's another thing, too. You know, going back to what I was saying, you know, nobody, you know, you talk to any of the old-time roadshow guys and people like that, like, you know, Nick Millard. Nobody ever expected any of this stuff to last. You know how many films we've probably lost? Because I remember seeing a lot of shit on TV as a kid. You just don't see it anywhere anymore.
I tell you what, back in the day, I remember watching things like Frankenstein's Bloody Terror was on The Late Show.
Yeah.
You never knew but what I'm you'd all, find. Those Klaus Kinski movies you mentioned, those Edgar Wallace dudes.
Yeah, those. Yeah, all that stuff. You know, Mad Executioners, Circus of Fear was in that lumped in that thing, but that was like after he had done that run.
Right.
But, yeah, that whole cast of characters over there, Heinz Drack and Eddie Arndt, Kinski, and, that stuff, you know, was so innovative, too, with all the trapdoors and the fucking death traps and things. There was just some really cool shit going on with that.
I agree.
And, it was great late-night filler because they had to shove something here. They used to run some of that shit, though. I remember, you know, seeing some of that stuff in theaters. Like, you know, it would be in there one day and gone the next, probably as a tax write-off or something. So they say, oh, yeah, we did show it.
There you go, yeah.
So, yeah, I miss it. See, people don't understand. That stuff had a niche, you know, because this is all new back then. You know, like, you know, the only guy I know that still sells this stuff is Sinister Cinema. He's got a pretty good catalog of the West German stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, worth checking out. Because once you see one, you want to see a couple of ones. As a matter of fact, I think Fred Olwyn Ray's Retro Media has a couple also. He's got one with, it's Christopher Lee. Yeah, Christopher Lee was in a bunch of them, too.
Yeah, you know, it was,
just,
yeah.
It's just amazing how, you know, you look at stuff like The Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism, or whatever they put, Blood Demon, or whatever they're selling it as. I mean, another atmospheric one that was, you know, British West German. You know, Lee popped up in a bunch of these things. Theater of Death, Castle of the Living Dead. He was in a ton of this stuff. So was Donald Sutherland. They all popped up in this stuff. That's why, you know, you love the American stuff, but you also you get fascinated by the European stuff too, because it's so different. Now,
I loved all the European stuff even more.
Yeah, here's one you won't even remember: the Cape Canaveral Monsters in 1960.
I do remember that one. Yeah, that one played on the Sci-Fi Theater on Saturdays.
Yeah, Phil Tucker did it. I haven't seen this thing in years. I'm wondering, you know, what the fuck happened to that? It was a really bad movie. It was some couple were killed in a car accident and are taken over by aliens who are trying to sabotage our space program. And if I remember right, didn't one guy's arm keep falling off or something? I mean, it was a really weird fucking movie. Does anybody see in the New York area? They had Chiller Theater. That was the big horror showcase. Then that was on Channel 11. On Channel 9 was Supernatural Theater. Then at 1 o'clock in the morning on Channel 4 on Saturday night was Festival of Thrillers. So at one point, like, Festival of Thrillers had all the Universal stuff, and Chiller had like the standbys: Attack of the 50-Foot Woman, the Cyclops, Plan 9 from Outer Space, Killers from Space, Cape Canaveral Monsters, Four-Sided Triangle. It was like, you know, they had all this great stuff. And then, you know, Supernatural Theater had The Crawling Eye, Giant Behemoth, Carnival of Souls. It was just, you know, fascinating stuff. That's where you got, you know, actually see the stuff. And another really underrated goodie from 94 that I don't know why this didn't get theatrical was something called Mosquito. And our buddy Gunnar Hansen was in that. And
I liked it.
Actually, the effects were really good, the models and the animation. And what happens is a mosquito sucks the blood of a dead alien that crashed in a swamp and gets really big, and they start sucking people, and they just wipe out a whole fucking campground. And a government agent, a park ranger, who was actually Ron Ashton, who was a guitarist from the Stooges, and Gunnar Hansen, who was a bank robber, you know, they're all trying to find out what's going on with this thing. There's a couple of, you know, pretty cool in-jokes and some nods to Night of the Living Dead and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But even Gunnar said, you know, when we were talking about it, he said, I don't know why that thing was ever released theatrically. It was that good. So, yeah. There's, you know, there's probably a lot more films that, you know, I'm not remembering right off the bat that have slipped through the cracks. And it's a shame, too, because, you know, I go through this shit and the people go, why do you want to keep this going? Well, why should you forget about it? It's history, you know? This is where all, you know, for better or for worse, whatever's going on today came from. Not that I actually agree with anything's going on today, but you know, stop motion dinosaurs led to computer generated dinosaurs. You know, and so did dinosaur lizards with fucking fins taped to them and shit. But it's a natural progression of shit. You know, more things change. You know, but everything's going to go back because, you know, a lot of the CG stuff's overkill. I mean, you know, case in point was the King Kong remake. You didn't need three fucking T-Rexes. It was stupid. So, but, you know, what the fuck do I know? You're catering to a whole different audience. I mean, there's some people out there that genuinely appreciate this stuff, and there's some people that just poo-poo it off as, oh, you know, it's not Freddy or Jason, or it's not this, or it's not Rob Zombie or Quentin Tarantino. You know something? Fuck that. You know, the thing is that the guys that came before this weren't emulating anybody. They were all originals. All these other guys are emulating the originals. I mean, you know, to a certain extent, they admired, you know, the masters like Val Lewton and, you know, James Whale and people like that. But, you know, when you got to a certain point in time, they were the originals. Because everything they were coming up was new and original because nobody ever did it before. Now there's nothing new and original. All these guys are doing is emulating, stealing, and copycatting because they can't seem to come up with anything original. So, I got to get off that kick because I keep saying it, but it's not going to change anything. People aren't, you know, people, They're gonna do what they want to do, and unfortunately, I said this before. You know, it's like a fade away, where sooner or later, you know, and you're seeing it now. The Universal monsters are fading away into the past. You know, they're not that marketable anymore. You know, they become part of pop culture, but to what extent?
I don't know, but in L.A. they were everywhere, man. Everywhere you turned, you hit the Wolfman or Bela Lugosi or, you know, Boris Karloff. They were everywhere because that's kind of a, you know, they're in Hollywood. That's kind of, they still appreciate that history. And so everywhere I turned, I was hitting those guys. You've got about 2 minutes, Pete.
Yeah, well, you know, it's good they appreciate it out there, but some places they don't. You know, it just sort of goes with the cracks. But like I said, all this is, you know, what came before. And Todd just said we're out of fucking time. So on that happy note, I will say goodnight, stay sick, and I'm going to whip up something cool for next week. So until then, bye.
Dominate your dreams. They're all yours right here in the Grindhouse.